Jesus tells us to take up our cross and follow him. You're listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities, and it is our aim to lead you to the cross through the teaching of God's word.
Come break our culture, tear down our pride. Lord, take your church and purify. Oh, we are ready to stand in your love. Come, King Jesus, deliver us. Oh, my King is coming. Restless hearts, be still.
Because I don't have the whole Bible memorized. I do memorize many times where places are in the Bible and things that I want to share with guys, but I would have it with me all the time. And the reason that I had it with me was because there were going to be opportunities that would come up, and I was going to take the opportunities to be able to share with the people who were around me. Now you got cell phones. You have the whole Bible on your cell phone with a little search app on there, and you can even pull out Greek and, you know, all of this stuff. We've got an awesome opportunity to be able to share with people. And that's one of the things that Jehoshaphat did with his people. He not only took away the high places, but he was proactive in that he was reaching out to his own people and sharing with them what the word of God had to say. And because of that, this guy was blessed. You see the protection and the favor of God as a result of that. Verse 10, it says, "And the fear of the Lord fell on all the kingdoms of the lands that were around Judah, so that they did not make war against Jehoshaphat." Jehoshaphat hasn't done anything. All that Jehoshaphat has done is been faithful to God. He's taken away the high places. He's removed the wooden images. He has people going out and teaching the people of God. There's no warfare that's taken place in this passage. He hasn't done anything as far as going out and attacking anybody or even threatening anybody. And what God does is he gives him favor with the people who are around him. God protects him. And not only is it protection, it's favor in the sight of the people around him. Look at verse 11. "Also, some of the Philistines brought Jehoshaphat presents and silver as tribute. And the Arabians brought him flocks, 7,700 rams and 7,700 male goats. So Jehoshaphat became increasingly powerful, and he built fortresses and storage cities in Judah." You know, one of the things that God will do when you are walking with him is that he'll bless you in all kinds of different ways, and some of the ways that he blesses you are unexpected. This is one of those things that happened to me when I was a young believer. I was struggling with finances, and specifically what was happening was God was dealing with me on the whole issue of tithing. And so I wasn't making a lot of money at the time, and so many times it would be a choice between groceries and Jesus, or it would be a choice between the electric bill and Jesus. And it was like that for quite a while, because I was pretty new in construction. It was California. It was on again, off again. And so a lot of times I'm praying when I'm about to give my offering to the Lord and just going, "God, you got to cover for me. Cause if I do this, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pay this bill. You need to do something here." And I've told you before that I got money in the mail with no return address, no way that anybody could know this stuff. Literally just bills in an envelope with my address and name on it. And they would send money to me. This one time, I go to the front door, somebody's knocking at the front door. And again, it was, you know, one of those times when things were kind of tight. I go to the front door and there's this guy standing there, and he's got two bags full of groceries. And I'm like, "Hi, what can I do for you?" And he goes, "Well, you know, I just wanted to give you these groceries." And I go, "Why are you giving me groceries?" And so we started having a conversation. It became obvious because of his language that the guy didn't know the Lord. And so he was an unbeliever, and he doesn't know the Lord, and he's bringing me groceries. And in my mindset was, you know, "You're an unbeliever, you're bringing me stuff, that can't be of God." that was kind of my attitude. You know, he's going to give me these groceries, and I'm like, "Well, this can't be from the Lord, because God wouldn't supply my needs from an unbeliever." And so I kind of went, "Well, you know, I don't really know that I need it." And, you know, I'm looking at the guy's face, and his face just falls. As soon as I said that, I go, "You know what? That, you know, Yeah, thank you. Just thank you very much. I appreciate for you for bringing the groceries, and I took them. And, you know, I said thank you and said bye to them, and, you know, we finished our conversation. I took the groceries, I took them into my kitchen, and I set them down on the counter. And as soon as I set them down on the counter, God spoke to my heart, and he said, I'll provide for you any way I want to. And this is an example of that. You follow God, and God does all kinds of cool things, and he uses anybody that he wants to do them. And it's just an awesome thing. And so, again, you have God's protection. You have God's favor as a result of Jehoshaphat's obedience to the Lord. Look at verse 12. So Jehoshaphat became increasingly powerful. He built fortresses and storage cities in Judah. He had much property in the cities of Judah. And the men of war, mighty men of valor, were in Jerusalem. These are their numbers according to their fathers' houses. Of Judah, the captains of thousands, Adna the captain, and with him 300,000 mighty men of valor. And next to him was Jehohanan. Somebody should name their kid that. And next to him was Jehohanan, the captain, and with him 280,000. And next to him was Amasiah, the son of Zichri, who willingly offered himself to the Lord. And with him 200,000 mighty men of valor. You know, when you go through and look at this kind of harkens back to David. Remember when we were going through in 1 Chronicles and talking about David's mighty men of valor? And I think that there's a reason for that, because Jehoshaphat is following in the footsteps of David. And so Jehoshaphat's doing the things that David would do. He loves the Lord like David loved him. God blesses him like he blessed David. And David had mighty men of valor that were with him, and so does Jehoshaphat. That phrase there, who willingly offered himself to the Lord, I really like that. I think that's a cool thing. And it was spoken about one guy specifically, Amasiah the son of Zichri, willingly offered himself to the Lord. That's something that we should all be doing. You know, you wake up in the morning and you go to pray. That's what you do when you wake up in the morning, right? Before your head gets off the pillow, you start talking to the Lord right at that point. When you're in your bed, you need to go, Lord, here I am. You know, it's like, you need to protect me. You need to watch out for me. You need to have your hand on me. You know, you just start talking. And when I wake up, usually my wife is already gone because she goes to school earlier than I do. And when I wake up in the morning, it's a prayer from the time that I wake up to the time that I'm in the shower. And then I'll go down and read a little bit a lot of times before I take off for work. And then all the way to work, I got 20 minutes to talk to the Lord. I'm spending some time talking to the Lord at that point, because I know when I get here, there's going to be people in my office all day long, and I'm never going to get the time that I want. And so I take the time that I can get, and I spend it with the Lord. And the reason that I do that is because I want God to be in control of my life. I want him to be in control of my day. I'm willingly offering myself to the Lord. God, whatever you want today, you got it. That's what I want to do. Willingly offer yourself to the Lord. And I don't do that all the time. There are times when I forget. And the day is different when I forget. It is. It's totally different. And so there are those times when I remember and I offer myself to the Lord, and then those times I forget, and halfway through the day I'm like, what is going on? And I start realizing what's happening. Offered himself to the Lord, and with him 200,000 mighty men of valor. Of Benjamin, Eliada, a mighty man of valor, and with him 200,000 men armed with bow and shield. And next to him was Jehozabad, and with him 180,000 prepared for war. These served the king. That's another good phrase in that passage. They serve the king. You know, I didn't come into a relationship with Jesus thinking that I was going to be this awesome king's kid and that I should get everything that I want because, after all, God is my father. That's not how I came into this whole relationship. I came into this whole relationship recognizing that I was a mess and I needed something, and that something I needed was Jesus. And, you know, it's true that I'm a son of God. It's true. It's true that I've been adopted in the family. That's true. It's true that I'm going to be a fellow heir with Christ and a fellow heir with you too. That's all true too. But you know what I do? I serve Jesus. That's what we all do. We serve Jesus. You know, the word for servant in the New Testament is slave. And so before I knew Jesus, I was a slave to sin. And after I came into a relationship with God, what I am is a slave to the Lord. I'm going to be a slave one way or another. One way or another, it's going to be happening. So I can serve sin or I can serve the Lord, but I'm going to have to serve somebody, like Bob Dylan famously said. Some of you don't know that. Bob Dylan walked with the Lord for a little bit. In any case, you want to serve the Lord. In chapter 18, you have Jehoshaphat compromising, and this whole chapter is about the danger of compromise. verse 1, it says, Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance, and by marriage he allied himself with Ahab. After some years, he went down to visit Ahab in Samaria, and Ahab killed sheep and oxen in abundance for him, and the people who were with him, and persuaded him to go up with him to Ramoth-Gilead. This is just a wild, this is a wild part of the story, because Jehoshaphat, this guy is just blessed on every side, and he aligns himself with Ahab of all things, and he's in, it's like this inordinate interest in this dude. And, in a lot of ways, I just don't know where it comes from. It's kind of like, lifestyles of the rich and wicked, Some people are just into movie stars and pop stars and reality TV and that kind of thing. And they look at all these people who have what the world wants, and they see their messed up lives. They see what's going on with them, and they want to take their cues from them. They want to dress like them. They want to do their makeup like them. They want to do their hair like them. And everything is about these people. And see, these are some of the most messed up people on the planet. Some of them can't string two sentences together unless it's written down in a script someplace. And people follow after them. And it's, it's not something that you want to be doing. Are you like that? Are you constantly looking at what the world's, putting out there and going, oh, I just want to be like that? And that was the problem with Jehoshaphat. It's going to get him into real issues. So does that stuff intrigue you? Does it draw you? What are you watching on TV? What are you listening to on the radio? What do you, if you're doing the radio or on Spotify or on Pandora? My son would laugh at Pandora. He thinks Spotify is cool. In any case, what are you looking at, and what is drawing you? And one of the things that we need to watch out for is compromise in our life. It says in the passage, he joins himself by marriage with Ahab. It's not that he married somebody from Ahab's family. It's that he got his son's wife from Ahab's family. So Ahab's daughter married Jehoshaphat's son. Turn over to chapter 21 real quick. Check this out. It says in verse 6. Now let's start in verse 5. It says, Jehoram, this is Jehoshaphat's son, was 32 years old when he became king, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem, and he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, just as the house of Ahab had done, for he had the daughter of Ahab as a wife, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. You know what the evil was? Look up a couple verses. Verse 2, he had brothers, the sons of Jehoshaphat, names them there, and their father gave them, verse 3, great gifts of silver and gold and precious things, with fortified cities in Judah, but he gave the kingdom to Jehoram because he was the firstborn. Now, when Jehoram was established over the kingdom of his father, he strengthened himself and killed all his brothers with the sword, and also others of the princes of Israel. And he reigned again 8 years, and he walked in the way of the kings of Israel. So Jehoshaphat is interested in Ahab. He wants to align himself with Ahab on some level. It probably has to do with, trying to get the kingdom to come back together and that kind of stuff. The northern kingdom of Israel took off and abandoned God. And, you can imagine all kinds of good motives for Jehoshaphat in this whole thing. If I can just align myself with Ahab, maybe I can turn his heart. I can bring him back to the Lord. If we get our families together, we'll get together on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and we'll have these great talks, and Ahab will come to know Jesus. And, and that kind of thing. And, it's like he can, his daughter can marry my son. She's a little out there. And, and it's like, some of the piercings and stuff are a little bit weird, but, she's probably okay. And, her language isn't the greatest and stuff like that. But my son, he follows the Lord, and he could probably turn around. He can make a walk with God and that kind of stuff. And it'll be something that will unite us and not divide us. And you can see all the things that this guy would be thinking. And it's the same stuff that people think nowadays in the same kind of situations. And what ends up happening with Jehoshaphat is, after he dies, every one of his sons gets put to death by the kid that he did this with. Every one of his sons. Can you imagine? It's just over the top that somebody would be like that, that somebody could do that. And you know whose fault it was? It was Jehoram's. It was. But guess who else? Jehoshaphat's involved in that whole thing. He never should have been doing that, never should have been there. And there are things that you do when you compromise that you don't know what the outcome is going to be, and the outcome may not come out until you're long gone. And you cause your family untold grief because of your compromise in those kinds of situations. So Ahab, verse 3, king of Israel, said to Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, will you go with me against Ramoth-Gilead? And he answered him, I am as you are, and my people as your people. We will be with you in the war. God forbid that you ever say that to somebody who's a pagan like Ahab. I am as you are. I am nothing like you, dude. You know, I'm a sinner. But I'm not in rebellion against God, and I'm not somebody who's going to go around killing people who love the Lord. You know, I don't want to be anything like them. I was like them. I don't want to be like that anymore. Spent enough of my past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles, is what Peter said, in which he walked in all kinds of, filthy language and abominable idolatries and partying and all that stuff. I'm paraphrasing there, but those are the terms that he uses. In 1 Peter chapter 4. And so we don't want to be in the same place that they're at. You know, the thing that makes you attractive as a believer is not the fact that you're like everybody, it's the fact that you're unlike them. It's always what makes people attractive. And, you know, when I was in construction, you know, guys would come up to me, and again, you know, I don't know a whole lot. When I'm first walking with the Lord, I don't know a whole lot. I do know that I'm supposed to be in love with Jesus. I do know some of the basics. I'm supposed to be reading my Bible. I do know that I'm supposed to be different. And God had changed me in all kinds of ways. I was a drunk before I came to the Lord. And God took it all away. It was a cool thing. And there were all these attitudes that I had that were just wicked. And God took them all away. And I'm working on construction crews, and guys are around me, and they're seeing this stuff. But you always had the guy who was nothing but a compromiser who was on the crew. And a lot of times guys would come up to me, and they'd start talking to me about the Lord. And then the dude who's been cussing all week long and telling dirty jokes and then talking about Jesus out the other side of his mouth comes walking up, and he wants to get involved in the conversation on my side. You know what I always said to him? Shut up. I'm not joking. That's what I would say to him. You need to shut up. Go back over, go work on that wall over there. I don't want you helping me, okay? And, then we'd have a talk afterwards after I embarrassed him and stuff. But I'm not interested in that. I want people to see who Jesus is, see what he's really like. And I'm not this perfect example of Christ, but I'm not somebody who's going around with the F word coming out of my mouth every other sentence. That is not what a Christian looks like, and everybody in the world knows it. And so again, I came from a rowdy background, and construction can be rowdy and all that kind of stuff. And those guys know the difference. They know the difference. And so we need to be something that is different. You don't want to be as they are. And that was one of the problems that Jehoshaphat had in this situation. You don't want the world to be looking at you and saying, you're just like us. You're just like me. You don't want that to be happening. They want to look at you and think that you're peculiar. That's what you want. Peter said that we're peculiar people, and some of you are very peculiar. Not just weird, but different. That's what we're, it's a good thing to be different. When you talk about compromise, a lot of times people think that it's going to be easier for them if they compromise. It's going to be, they're finally going to get what they want. And, so I'll compromise my walk with God a little bit, and maybe I'll laugh at the dirty jokes and that kind of thing. And they think that maybe they'll like them better. And usually that's what compromise is about. I just want people to like me. And if they like me, then maybe I can tell them about Jesus. But when we've talked about this before. When you are that person who's always coming up to the cool kids and trying to be just like them, do they ever accept you? No, they never do. You just look like a kiss up. You're just coming up going, oh, I just want to be your friend. Will you be my friend? And that kind of stuff. And that's what the world looks at with Christians too. Don't do that. Compromise just doesn't get you into any kind of good places. There's a man who went out hunting and found a big brown bear. He'd always wanted to shoot a bear. And he had just the right gun to do the job, so he got that bear in his sights and was beginning to squeeze the trigger. But just then, the bear turned around and said, "Excuse me, why do you want to shoot me? Why don't we try to negotiate the matter? What is it that you want exactly?" So the hunter put down his gun and said, "Okay, well, what I want more than anything else is a fur coat. I'm really cold." The bear said, "Let me tell you what I'm looking for. I want a full stomach." And the bear emerged from the forest alone a little while later. The negotiations had been successful. The hunter got his fur coat, and the bear got a full stomach. Got to watch out for compromise. Here's another one. This is historical. When the federal income tax was signed into law in 1913, a senator speaking in opposition to the bill stated, "If we allow this 1% foot in the door at some future date, it might rise to 5%. The original income tax was 1%. Can you imagine? In any case, Jehoshaphat is sitting here with Ahab. And so, verse 4, it says, "Also Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, 'Please inquire for the word of the Lord today.' And then the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, 400 men, and said to them, 'Shall we go to war against Ramoth-Gilead, or shall I refrain?' And so they said, 'Go up, for God will deliver it into the king's hand.' But Jehoshaphat said, 'Is there not still a prophet of the Lord here that we may inquire of him?'" I think this is really interesting, because what's happening here is Jehoshaphat knows that they should be speaking to the Lord about these things before they go into battle. He knows that. He knows that it's a good thing to inquire of the Lord. But if he'd been inquiring of the Lord before he ever went up to northern Israel, he wouldn't be there in the first place having the conversation with Ahab. In any case, these false prophets come up and they begin prophesying and talking about all the good things that are going to happen. "Go up, for God will deliver it into the king's hand." But Jehoshaphat sees something fishy here, and he goes, "Is there not still a prophet of the Lord here that we may inquire of him?" So the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, "There's still one man by whom we may inquire of the Lord, but I hate him, because he never prophesies good concerning me, but always evil. He is Micaiah, the son of Imlah." And Jehoshaphat said, "Let not the king say such things." That's a church boy right there. You know, "Please don't say that. That's not a very nice thing to say, Ahab, you baby butcher." Then the king of Israel called one of his officers and said, "Bring Micaiah, the son of Imlah, quickly." And the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, clothed in their robes, sat each on the entrance of the gate of Samaria, and all the prophets prophesied before them. Now Zedekiah, the son of Chenaanah, had made horns of iron for himself, and he said, "Thus says the Lord, with these you shall gore the Syrians until they are destroyed." And so you have these false prophets coming up to prophesy before Ahab and before Jehoshaphat. And again, there's 400. I want you to notice the odds there. It's 400-1. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. There's another instance where Elijah had the same odds against him. You understand that those are the odds against you. Most times when you're talking about somebody who's going to stand up for the Lord, who's going to say the things that the Lord wants said, who's actually going to tell people the truth about things, it's usually going to be those kinds of odds, 400-1. And I'm not just talking about people in the world. I'm talking about people in church too. You quote verses out of the Bible and people are going to come down on you like crazy. This stuff happens on Facebook all the time. You guys have seen it, right? So somebody's going through and they say something or they do something or they put some weird picture up, and some believer comes up and goes, "Hey, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't do that. Here's why." And gives a Bible verse. And then out of the woodwork come the 400 prophets of Baal, who are going to say all kinds of vile things about the person who had the gall to quote a Bible verse. You know, 400-1. Expect it. You need to expect it. That's how life goes. It's always been like that. And again, it's no different now than it was before. You know, down in verse 9, it says the king of Israel and the king of Judah, clothed in their robes, sat each on his throne, and they sat at a threshing floor at the entrance of the gate of Samaria. You know what threshing floor is in Hebrew? It means empty place.
You've been listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Washington. If you're wanting to know more about what it means to follow Christ, then please contact our church office by phone at 509-736-2086. You can also look us up online at calvary-tricities.org. There you will find a wide variety of Steve's teachings to listen to or to download for free. If you want to join us for church sometime, we're located at 10611 West Clearwater Avenue in Kennewick, Washington. Our Sunday service times are 8:30 and 10:30 a.m. and 6 p.m. We also meet on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. We hope you have been blessed today and will join us again next time on Crosswalk.